you have in mind. Yeah, that's what you're all about. Good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, sitting here with Becky Ivins. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great today. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
After our show last night,
we had a great time. You're groovy. There was lots of references to groovy last night. It was great. What we're talking about is the Oklahoma Senior Follies. First performance was last night. My wife and I attended and just had a great time. It was lots of fun. They had, I was a little surprised that out in front that you could get prior to or during intermission, you can get a glass of wine or some water or pop. And so it was just delightful.
Which is amazing to me that you could get a glass of wine at a school.
So my wife, who is a school teacher, said, I don't know how they do this.
Well, that's because the Hudson Performance Hall, which was greatly financed by Cliff Hudson, is not a part of the school officially.
Oh, how smart.
Yeah, so they can rent it out to other groups like the Oklahoma Senior Follies in order to have some revenue coming in so that their drama department gets the use of that wonderful hall.
It's a great hall, performance hall, theater. It's fantastic to see the performance there.
Yeah, the stage is deep and it's great. Place. So
if you're interested in seeing the Oklahoma Follies, and I really hope you are, it's a great, lots of fun today at 3 o'clock and tomorrow at 3 o'clock. And you can go to OklahomaSeniorFollies.com and get tickets there.
You can get tickets there. You can buy tickets at the door.
Yeah.
So
lots of fun.
Yeah. So, well, guess who we've got with us?
One of our favorites,
Ron Shalott, our attorney at law, who keeps us on the straight and narrow. Well,
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Well, there's some attempts there at least. So I do call Ron and text and ask questions a lot because I want to play by the rules, but you have to know what the rules are to play by the rules. And that's what we're talking about today. They're new rules, revised rules.
So I was really shocked by how long the Landlord-Tenant Act has stood without being touched, almost as long as you've been in real estate.
Like almost it's been that with long,
you right? Without change, just over 40 years.
Well, good morning, by the way.
Good morning, Ron.
You guys are just having too much fun talking to yourselves. I'm just going over here with Mike, Mr. Gannon. We'll go play cards or something.
Why am I here? Yeah.
Well, you were talking about change, the way things change. I was teaching a high school class several years ago, and I was trying to impart how words change. So I asked the class, so if I use the word groovy, what do you think it means? And the response I got was that you're very old.
Oh.
Not quite the response I was looking for. But bringing up groovy and that kind of thing.
Sure.
Yes. Things do change. The Landlord-Tenant Act actually has been around since 1978. That's when it was first enacted in Oklahoma. It was the legislature got together with a landlord group and some tenant people and came up with the act. It has been in effect. There's been a couple little minor changes here and there. Nothing very substantive, and we still don't have a particularly substantive change. We do have a couple changes that are going into effect, not into effect yet, but the Landlord-Tenant Act has been around quite some time, and it could use some more updating if I can make a commercial announcement.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, mainly because in 1978, you had a legislature that had a lot of attorneys in it at that time, and some things were written at that time with more legalese. And sometimes I think we need to get away from that and just get into some practical language. And Becky knows this because she and I have talked about this with contracts and other documents, that we like for them to be simplistic in language, complete, but simplistic enough that people can understand them. and can don't need lawyers.
Don't use unnecessary words.
That's correct.
And if you can
stay away from Latin, don't flip the verb and the subject, et cetera, you know, things like that.
So the Landlord-Tenant Act, it kind of lines out the responsibilities of the person who owns the property, the landlord, and the person who is leasing the property, the tenant. And each of them have separate responsibilities, and they're pretty clear in there.
And it's the Oklahoma Residential Landlord-Tenant Act. It only applies to residential rentals, not to commercial rentals.
If you're renting office space somewhere,
it's a whole different thing.
Right.
There are some laws pertaining to that, but it's not the same as this. And it also is inapplicable to things such as renting a dorm room at OU or OSU, I shouldn't leave them out, or if you're in a condo or a hotel room, things of that nature that are not landlord-tenant situations. It is only rental situations.
And when you talk about the landlord, now, I do some property management. Am I the landlord, or is the owner the landlord?
Well, the Act itself provides that the beneficial owner is responsible. So really, you can have a two-part situation, yet the beneficial owner cannot escape responsibility simply by having a management company or pushing it off on somebody else who doesn't have any assets, nothing to lose, that kind of thing. So the beneficial owner, which is the real owner of the property, the one that benefits from the property itself, has the responsibility of landlord under the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act to make sure everything is complied with.
You know, not that long ago, I had a lady that wanted me to manage 12 of her rentals. And I went to meet her, and I thought, well, that's a nice little package of rentals, and yet you only have to deal with one owner, which makes it easier. So I went and looked at the properties, and they were not in good repair. And then I went to their commercial property to meet them, and I realized that she had her husband, not a licensed anything, repairing a heating unit. And I said, well, when I manage property, I require that we have a professional check out the units at least once a year. And I like to do it in the fall because you want to be sure that, like, the heat exchanger is not cracked or something. You don't want to asphyxiate anything. Well, she wouldn't go along with that, and she wouldn't go along with fixing things that were dangerous, like steps that where railing was broken and stuff. So I just had to politely decline because I don't want that responsibility.
The Act itself sets perimeters as to what can be done, what can't be done, as to certain rights and obligations. It doesn't cover everything. And there are some things that you can address that are outside of the Act. But it's not always that situation where everything that you put into a rental agreement can be enforced if it is contrary to the Act itself. And the Act provides that certain obligations cannot be waived.
So we spent 2 weeks a little while back, actually March 6th, March 13th in 2021, talking about the Landlord-Tenant Act from the landlord's perspective, then from the tenant perspective. And if you want to go back and listen to Ron Shalhoub on those, it was very in-depth, very fantastic. You can get those at any podcast subscription, iHeartMedia, or iTunes, or anywhere that you find podcasts, you can locate that.
Can you get it on Spotify?
You can get on Spotify.
Okay.
It is there also. When we come back, we'll have our Money Men right after this on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We're here with Ron Shalhoub. We're talking Landlord-Tenant Act. If you want to be a part of the conversation, you can give us a call at 405-840-1000. That's 1000. It's time to talk to our money men.
NMLS number
1197740.
Matt McLean from SWBC Mortgage. How are you doing this morning, Matt?
Fantastic. Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Becky.
How are you today?
Beautiful. I mean, this weather and temperature, it's a good morning.
Cool weather. I was very, very thankful to walk outside in shorts and a sweatshirt, which is my favorite weather that there is. That's, if I can wear shorts and a sweatshirt, it's a good day.
Can't beat it. You're right.
So tell us, Matt, what's happening in the market?
Well, guys, the market was a little quiet this week. So I know Dean and I have been on the last several weeks, and we've talked volatility and rates going up, but we didn't see that this week. So knock on wood, perhaps we're going to see some, stability, if you will. But rates are still good. We've talked in the past, they're not where they were 2 years ago, historical lows. But on our 30-year, we're right around 5.5 to 5.75. And on the 15, the low fives, perhaps high fours. So rates are good, very good.
You know, I had my first letter come back, the lender approval letter, come back at 6% this week.
Oh.
It was written like last week, but a pre-qualification letter.
Right.
Yeah. So kind of headed toward the sixes, I think. And it was an A-credit buyer, too. It was just they didn't go with a lender with competitive rates.
Huh.
Interesting. But, yeah, you're right, Becky. That's certainly what all the experts are predicting. It's funny, Dean and I, we published the chart this week, went back all the way to 1974. And you look at where we are today. Compared historically, the rates are really, they're good. They're not where they were, but they're good, and they're better than they were in the early 80s lot.
Send me that chart. That would be interesting.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, it's very interesting.
I remember the first home loan I ever got. I was living down in Florida, and it was at 6.25%. And I was so happy. Like, that was a fantastic rate. It was because it had been in the sevens prior to that. And it was like, oh, wow, this is great. This is a great. So it's all a comparable of what you're comparing.
Well, and you know that your A lenders, your A buyers get the best rates. And at one point, now the highest I've ever sold is 16.5%.
Wow.
But they went to 18.5%. I just didn't happen to hit that mark with buyers. The 5.5 is looking pretty good. So, Dean, we appreciate you being here. And if someone wants to call Dean, Mark, how would they – or Dean, listen to me.
You can call Matt McLean or Dean Riddell. They will answer it at 405-858-7770. That's 405-858-7770. Matt McLean with SWBC Mortgage. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Have a good show.
If you didn't have your crayon out to write down that number,
you can go to BeckyIvins.com, click on Becky's Favorites, and you'll see SWBC Mortgage, Dean Riddell, and Matt McLean right at the top right there.
And we're here with Ron Shalott. And Ron, we want to have you on more often this year because everybody loves that you're on because you stay right on top of stuff. And we're talking about the Landlord-Tenant Act. And before we go over the changes in the act, let's just kind of review what our basic, the guts of the act are. It just lines out what has to be provided, what responsibilities the landlord has, and what does the tenant have.
It sets that out. It also sets out where it applies and where it doesn't apply. It goes into certain details because there are differences if you're renting a single-family residence as opposed to an apartment in a complex. So it does differentiate certain times on those. It also provides for certain exceptions that can be made, but not everything can be waived out of the act. There are times that you can, for example, agree that if they're renting a house, if they mow the yard and do the maintenance work, that they can have some relief on rent, or that they're required to do that in exchange for lower rental. I mean, there are some things that, that can be modified in your rental agreement. But the best thing to do, first off, if you're going to enter into that any specific kind of rental agreement, and especially one where you have those little modifications, is to go to the Act itself and look at the Act and familiarize yourself with the Act. And especially if you are the landlord, you should know the Act, because that Act is going to be very important in determining what your responsibilities are, what your rights are, what can be imposed upon you. And if you're a tenant, I encourage you to look at it as well, but I know not many people do.
Well, and one of the things that I know I do in my leases, now there are some that I begin to waive this responsibility, but I write in my lease that I provide the chemical treatments for the lawn, because I don't want my house looking like a, I don't want, you know, my house looking like the rental on the block. And so you have to provide chemical, but can you do that if you don't put it in the lease? Because somebody may be allergic to the chemical on there or something.
Well, that's what you have to look at. That's what you have to look at, is that you have to look at what you are imposing. But you also have to look at the person who's renting as well. Sometimes people will have certain deficiencies, certain things that they're allergic to, and you should inquire about that before entering into the rental agreement, especially if you're doing that kind of activity where you are having chemicals applied, or if you're going to be painting or using any kind of cleaning products.
Okay. So what are the basic responsibilities of the landlord?
Well, generally, you would think of upkeep of the property. And if you're in a situation where it's not a single-family residence, there's going to be common areas that you have a duty to upkeep those specifically and keep those fit for safety concerns. In all of those situations, it is what you would think of almost as common sense in the terms of, I don't own this, so I shouldn't be the one that has to go repair this or make sure that this runs correctly or keep something safe. That should be the landlord's responsibility, because they own the property, and you sure don't want me doing electrical work in a house that I'm renting, because that would not turn out very well.
Right. Could be a thrilling experience.
Could be electrifying, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes. So you know, generally, if you think about that as your basis, but the Act itself specifies out what the landlord is responsible for and what the tenants would be responsible for. The landlord being responsible to do repairs to keep it in a fit and habitable condition. Of course, that makes sense. You know, if you've got a hole in the roof, it needs to be fixed. If you've got a wall missing, that needs to be fixed. If you have a raised door, front doorway, and it's 3-4 feet up and there's no steps, well, that needs to be fixed. You know, it's a lot of that is common sense, but the Act imposes that, so there is a remedy if one of the parties doesn't comply. And that's why I said you need to really look at the Act. Although in my practice, I used to be on the lawyer referral service for the county bar back when I started, and one of the calls that I'd invariably get, almost one a day, would be, okay, I was renting a property, and now they're chasing me for rent. And I said, well, what happened? Well, I walked out. Is the lease over? No. Why'd you walk out? I did. And they wanted me to fix it after the fact, after they've left the premises, and the landlord now is coming after them, and that's usually not a good situation, because there's very little you can do at that particular point. So you certainly want to be proactive in looking at what the lease can and cannot provide. Of course, dealing with a reputable company is helpful, always.
Always.
What about heat and air conditioning? Is that a must for a landlord to provide?
Okay. You have to supply good and safe working electrical, plumbing, sanitary, heating, ventilating, air conditioning, and other facilities and appliances, including elevators, if you have an elevator situation. So you have to supply that and maintain it. But things sometimes break in the middle of the night, and it's not always possible to get it fixed immediately. And that's understood, is that it's got to be done in a reasonable amount of time.
And there's where a lot of arguments come in of what's reasonable, right?
Precisely, and by the time you try to enforce it.
We'll be back with what's new in the Landlord-Tenant Act right after this news break on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member, Becky Ivins Real Estate Team. Here with Becky Ivins, we're talking with Ron Shalott, attorney at law, about the Landlord-Tenant Act. And it's time for our word of the day. The day is brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing from a small repair to a complete replacement. Give them a call at 728-3700. That's 405-728-3700. Becky, what's our word of the day?
Landlord.
Landlord.
Ron, landlord.
One of my favorite words. It just sounds imposing.
Well, actually, you can look at it from two perspectives. Becky was asking about in the act itself, and the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act actually defines landlord for their purposes. For their purposes, it means the owner, lessor, or sublessor of the dwelling unit or the building of which it is a part, manufactured, or mobile home site, et cetera, et cetera. Also means, Becky was asking about this, a manager of the premises who fails to comply with the disclosure provisions of the act itself. So if the manager discloses, here's the owner, here's to you, go to complain to, if they're not following the act, then the manager is not necessarily personally responsible. But if they don't disclose it, then they're pretending like they're the owner. That doesn't relieve the owner, but it can give you another avenue. However, the word landlord itself, when you think about it, is what is it? Well, it is the person that has superiority, that's lorded over, superiority over land. In other words, the landowner would be the landlord because they own it, so they have the right on the land to do what they want with it. Certainly, of course, within legal bounds now, we have all these codes, et cetera. But the idea was it's their land. They can lord over everything on the land.
So where in this Landlord-Tenant Act, where can we find it? Someone's out there going, I really should know what's in it.
You really should. And you can, on the internet, of course, do a search on your favorite search engine to find it. The Oklahoma Bar Association, you can go to their OBA and find not only that, but a lot of other things in terms of self-help for the public. You can find the act there. You can go to the site managed by Legal Aid Services of Oklahoma, which is oklaw.org. That's oklaw.org. And the act is on there. It's with the different sections, so you're going to have the whole thing. So all the legalese, it's just basically off of the site that we have the laws put at, which is the Oklahoma State Courts Network site, oscn.net. So you can go there and look under legal research and find it that way. I understand, doesn't the Real Estate Commission also have it?
Yes, the Oklahoma Real Estate Commission has the Landlord-Tenant Act on air. Now, they don't have the updated version yet, but there's not that much that's changed. There's some a couple of significant changes, though.
There have been a couple of changes that the legislature this year have adopted and will go into effect on November 1. And that's always some of the confusion, is that laws don't always go into effect immediately. You have to look at whether there's the emergency provision that makes it in effect immediately, which is as soon as the governor signs it or the veto is overturned, or if there is an effective date in the act. And sometimes it's July 1 and sometimes it's November 1. And these are November 1, they go into effect. So until November 1, we're under the old sections and the unamended sections. And in, some of that is to give everybody time to get ready for the changes that are coming up. The two changes, one has to do with a victim of domestic violence or sexual violence or stalking. It allows that they may terminate a lease without penalty by providing the written notice and a protective order of an incident of that violence within 30 days, unless the landlord waives that time period. But the idea is to protect victims of violence. If you have a protective order, you can get out of the lease without paying any kind of penalty. That could be a problem that would prevent vulnerable people from leaving the residence because they figure they're going to still be responsible on the lease and it's still going to cost them money. So this takes that issue out of their decision making.
Can you evict someone that is having a domestic violence situation?
Well, there in the act, and I know in the leases that we've done, there is a criminal law situation where if they're violating the law, that would be a basis for termination of the lease. So you would really look at it from that particular situation, but you need to make sure that they're actually violating the law. For example, if they're running a drug manufacturing house in the apartment, and that is a problem. We had situations, and I know we talked about a couple of years ago with meth houses, things like that, where you are then damaging the property that way, but you're also bringing in a lot of bad characters. So, you know, there can be provisions allowing for that. But the Landlord-Tenant Act does give you that option to look at it if you're violating laws, because that's part of the tenant's responsibility under the act. And leases I know that we've done, we've always put that kind of language in there so that we make sure that a tenant, even if they haven't read the act, will know it and we have their signature with it.
Well, we put in our lease that we list the names of the people entitled to live there. And if anybody else stays there longer than 2 weeks, that would be grounds for eviction. And I put that in there after I had leased to this single mom, and then she brought a boyfriend in that the neighbor in a duplex would call me constantly saying, he's beating her again.
Oh, my.
And it's disturbing for my kids. They're hearing all of this, and it was terrible. So we put in there that, I mean, she couldn't bring anybody in. So that was grounds for eviction, which I think was a relief to her that she was evicted from there.
And you do that because you're renting to a particular person and you want to know as a landlord who is going to be occupying that residence, because that affects how much you rent for and what potential problems that there could be.
This week we entered a lease with someone who read their lease. So I liked them automatically because they actually read what they were signing. And they said, wait a minute, we can't have someone come stay for more than 2 weeks. And I said, well, no, you cannot. And so they said, well, can we put my sister-in-law on the lease because she's got MS? And sometimes she comes and stays with us when she has a flare-up so that we can help care for her. Well, it was a plenty big enough house. I didn't have a problem putting her on as a resident on the lease as well. But I don't want someone to move in, another family, or just anybody that's not supposed to be there. You rent to a certain number of people.
Well, and the Landlord-Tenant Act itself says it's reasonable to have two people per bedroom. So that's kind of a bellwether to look at. And when you're a landlord, you have to think about how much usage of the property, wear and tear, electricity, water services, things of that nature. The other change that has been enacted, which has gotten a little more publicity, a little more press, talks about if you have a situation where there's been a material noncompliance by the landlord and there's a need of repairs to remediate. The limitation up until November 1 of this year now was up to $100. You could seek reimbursement for you if you're the tenant. You can have the repair done and get it from the landlord, but only up to $100. As of November 1, that's going to increase. It'll be equal to or less than 1 month's rent. And there's a process to do it, and you have to follow the process in the act for notifying the landlord. But it gives the tenants a little more ammunition in terms of having things repaired by the landlord or getting it fixed themselves.
Now, they have to give notice to the landlord and give the landlord a reasonable time to get the repair done before they just take on doing the repair themselves, right?
There has to be writing of an intent to correct it. In other words, the landlord has to notify, and then a 14-day period for the landlord to comply. So unless there's an emergency situation, that's a little bit different. But the Act sets out the time limits and gives it an opportunity for the landlord to be notified and to get in and repair. But we've had situations where things have just taken way too long, and for $100, you know, the landlord's not really that excited about it. And when you're thinking about this too, that was in 78. 78, $100 was a lot more
right
than it is now. So, you know, 1 month is interesting. I would have opted for a little more, but, you know, 1 month is a start at least.
Well, as much as rents are now, that's quite a bit of money. Because, I mean,
can be.
Kind of an average rental amount right now is about $1,400 a month. For just, and if you're wanting a three bed with two bathrooms, you're going to pay more.
Right.
So,
but I always think about just the little apartment with two people in it.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
So when we come back, we're going to have your smoking hot deal right here on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. On the Move, and it's time for our smoking hot deal.
Hot, hot, hot. Feeling hot, hot, hot. Oh, Lord.
Our smoking hot deal is brought to you by Casa Brico Mexican Grill, located on the south corner of 122nd and Penn, and on 63rd, just west of Meridian. Casa Brico, fresh hot Mexican grill, and coming soon to
Yukon.
And
guess what? Write this on your calendar, because I did not go to Casa Brico this week, and I think I need to. So, our last day of the week to go
it
to
is.
Casa Brico.
I and think they open at 11, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are open at 11.
Open at 11. We got a couple hours. Oh, boy.
So,
Mike, can we hang around here?
Our smoking hot deal this week is 8121 Wood Duck. Wood Duck. And it's open tomorrow between 2 and 4 o'clock. This house is priced at $274,000. It is...
No, it is lower than that.
Well, it's $274,900 total because you buy the house for $239,900.
I see what you're saying.
And then you assume about a $35,000 solar...
Because it has brand new solar panels,
yes,
which makes the electric bill extremely low.
Well, it's $13 and something a month. $13.89, I believe.
I was telling my wife about
it.
We were talking about this last night. Uh-huh. And it was like, this electric bill is unbelievable.
Yes. Well, get solar panels, and it will not be unbelievable because the solar panel bill cost $119 a month. So add your $1,389 to that, which is basically your hookup, and you end up with less than, well, far less than an average bill for about a 2,000 square foot house, which is what this is. So it's open tomorrow. It's in the Wilshire Ridge edition near Council Road and Wilshire.
I personally love that area. I went to elementary school right near there.
Oh, did you? Do you know
Northridge Elementary?
That particular neighborhood is one of the few neighborhoods built in the mid to late 80s. Mm-hmm. Because we had our oil bust and people didn't do it. It was designed for much more expensive homes. So the lots are decent size because they were going to build bigger homes. But Ray Newman was the developer, and he built more reasonably priced, affordable homes that were like, I mean, he was used to building a nice, fancy house. So he just built a smaller, nice, fancy house.
I worked in high school and college helping to put wallpaper up in Ray Newman homes.
Yeah.
Among other, and all over that area.
He was a great developer.
Yeah. Yep. So if you want to see our Smoking Hot deal, you can go to BeckyIvins.com, click on search listings. It's right there. You can take a virtual tour. If you want a private tour, just give us a call at 405-722-3232.
What's our number, Mark?
405-722-3232.
Pretty easy.
Yep. And you can schedule a showing for yourself.
We kind of have, we're going to, as Mark would say, land this plane.
Land this plane.
On the Landlord-Tenant Act. But before we do that, Ron, there's an important health, is it a health power of attorney directive? What's the new thing that's going into effect?
Several months ago, I was here with you. I think it was October of last year,
yes,
I believe.
Was.
And we talked about that the Oklahoma legislature had adopted a new version of the Durable Power of Attorney Act, eliminating the old act completely and putting in a new act. The new act provided for a financial power of attorney, but specifically excluded health care powers of attorney. And we raised the alarm bells about that and said that's a big problem that's going to have to be fixed because individuals who are compromised, disabled, incapacitated, need that agent instead of going to court and getting a guardianship. So we certainly raised the alarm bells on that, and the Estate Planning, Probate, and Trust Committee of the Bar Association also raised alarm bells about that. And as a result, there is a new Oklahoma Health Care Agent Act that went into effect upon the governor's signature last month, and it now gives us a basis for an Oklahoma health care power of attorney. It is different than the old act. It's not the same thing as what was passed last year that went into effect November 1 of last year. It is a little more simplistic, but yet it is in effect. It does require two witnesses and does require notarization, whereas the financial just requires notarization, doesn't require the witnesses. There's some good and bad with it, but certainly it fixes the problem that we've had. So if you signed a health care power of attorney between November 1 and now, this act specifically makes that effective. It retroactively permits it. If you signed one before November 1 of last year, it's always been in effect. There hasn't been any change to that whatsoever. But now there is a new act with a new form that you can adopt and sign. So that has been fixed, I'm glad to say, because that was certainly a problem that we were looking at.
So it's a standardized form that someone can like go online and get and sign?
It is a standardized form that can be used. It's not required that you use it. The forms always say substantially in this basis. But the form itself does have a lot of options available in it. And certainly spells out the things that you can allow or even not allow your healthcare agent which is what it's called now, not an attorney in fact anymore, but an agent, your healthcare agent, to make decisions for you on. Yet, like other things in the law and like the financial one, there are some things in here that are not specifically addressed. One of the things is whether or not it waives HIPAA directly. There's some questions about that. And there are some other questions that those of us that practice in the area that we've always put in our forms and still put in our forms that the law itself doesn't cover. So you can kind of do it yourself, but I don't recommend it. I recommend that you actually get in hold of an attorney that practices in that area, not just any old attorney, but an attorney that does practice in the estate planning area. If you can't find them, you can go to the Oklahoma Bar Association, and certainly we have a list there, or give me a call.
Yeah, and to call Ron, to find his number, it's pretty easy. Just go to BeckyIvins.com. The tab on the right-hand side is Becky's Favorites, and you're going to find Ron Schott's number there. It is 405-528-2890.
And I've told this story before, but certainly I've had the situations where people have gone online and have gotten a power of attorney and have tried to utilize that with disastrous results. One time the person was incompetent to even sign it. Another time it was mistakenly done. So don't go online and get them. Spend the money to hire a lawyer. They're going to be a little more expensive now, actually, to me in my practice, simply because it requires more time for me to spend with the individual to go over the specifics. But it's well worth it compared to the thousands of dollars on a guardianship.
Well, we only have about a minute left to finish on our Landlord-Tenant Act. So tell us anything that we need to know.
You need to know that the act is something that does govern your residential leases, and you should certainly be familiar with the act, what can be done and what can't be done. Again, if there's a question about it, legal aid if you can't afford it, legal counsel, or contact an attorney to find out what your rights are as a tenant before you do something, before you walk out of your lease, before you do the repair, ask a lawyer.
Yeah, and then also, if you are the landlord, you need to read that act. I mean, it's 21 pages long. It's not that long. And you gain so much information to where you know what to do.
Ron Schott, thank you so much for being with us, as always, here on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. And if you want to share this with someone, go to any podcast, Spotify, iHeartMedia, iTunes, and look up Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, or do Becky Ivins. Click on Becky Ivins, and you'll be right there. We'll be with you next week right here, Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK.